Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
Governor Tony Evers again pleads, stay home. After Wisconsin records days with more than 7,000 COVID-19 positives, Assembly and Senate members reelect their leaders. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, Assembly Democratic Leader Gordon Hintz, Democratic Senate Leader Janet Bewley. Assembly and Senate Elections Committees will review how Wisconsin's record 3.2 million votes for president were cast and counted. The state's education agency asked for $1.6 billion more. Rewind, your week in review for November 13.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Wisconsin governors rarely use statewide addresses. I think the Governor Evers on Tuesday talking about the increasing threat of COVID was the first one since Governor Scott Walker used a so-called fireside address to talk about Act 10. But as I said, Governor Evers on Tuesday asked to speak to the state at night to talk about the growing and lethal threat of COVID. So before JR and I talk about that speech, let's listen to excerpts from Governor Evers' speech, followed by Dr. Ryan Westergaard, the chief medical officer for the state, saying, and look for this, there are no safe gatherings anymore. Please.
Wisconsin, this is serious. The crisis is urgent. Across our state, families, workers, and communities continue to face the challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic. Each day this virus goes unchecked is a setback for our economic recovery. Our bars, restaurants, small businesses, families, and farmers will continue to suffer if we don't take action right now. So tonight, I've signed Executive Order 94 advising Wisconsinites to stay home to save lives. We must get back to the basics of fighting this virus just like we did last spring, and it starts at home. It's not safe to go out. It's not safe to have others over. It's just not safe. With the holidays just around the corner, we recommend that you plan to celebrate just with your own household. You can still invite others to join virtually, but we advise you not to go to any gatherings with people who are not in your immediate home. Even if you do test negative for COVID-19, it's important to remember that just because you test negative today doesn't guarantee a negative test tomorrow. So please stay home.
The additional bad news about this virus is that in small gatherings and in households, it's extraordinarily contagious. So some data from Wisconsin and Tennessee just published a week ago showed that the risk of a household member becoming infected, if any member of the household is infected, whether they're an adult or a child, is 1 in 2 within a week. So 50% of people, unless we're very careful, can be expected to get infected. So both are highly, highly important. We need to restrict large gatherings because that's how the epidemic accelerates. But we also need to really be very, very careful about avoiding not only small gatherings of other people, but getting tested and doing isolation quarantine for people within households. So there's really no safe gathering right now, unfortunately.
JR, it's important that we go through some of this point by point. The governor said, I will have a legislative package, quote, in coming days. Yesterday's briefing, he said it'll be next week. I don't know what might be in it. Do you have any thoughts on what could be in it?
No. There are things they can reauthorize from the spring. Remember, they took a series of actions in April, so they could reauthorize some things. What I don't know is, what has he worked out, or is he to try to work out with Republican lawmakers? Speaker Robin Voss, fresh off his re-election as Assembly Speaker, said he had not talked to the governor before the speech. He called him afterward and left a message asking to sit down and talk about things. Robin told us that he had not met with the governor or talked to him directly for any length of time since that spring meeting that was taped secretly by one of the governor's aides. Right. So you need buy-in from Republican lawmakers to get anything done because they control both houses of the legislature. So what is going to be in this package, and what, equally important, what Republicans agreed to?
Well, okay, JR, but I want to come back to a very important word. Yes, the governor issued Executive Order 94, but the word advisory is critical. Talk about that importance.
Going into the speech, because it was an evening speech, because it was a statewide address, there was this building expectation the governor would try to add new restrictions on businesses or exercise some power, but nothing in there actually requires any action. It basically is a nice way of saying, please do this. And basically the governor's speech was the same message delivered in multiple times in these daily briefings through the Department of Health Services, but it was a different platform with a broader audience than a 1 o'clock thing that, you know, people like you and I are watching. It felt like trying to reach people through a different platform because they're not listening to what he's been saying so far.
Yeah. Let's talk about some other points. The governor did ask businesses and organizations, more than ever, give your employees, your workers, a chance to work from home. He noted that the federal CARES cash that allowed him to spend $2 billion expires at the end of the year, and we've received no indication that there's going to be a new CARES relief package negotiated before President Trump leaves office on January 20th. But the backdrop of this, JR, is Monday's Supreme Court hearing. Talk about the importance of that, please.
Well, remember, the Supreme Court in May shot down the extended stay-at-home order that was issued by Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm. We have a Third District Court of Appeals in Wausau that has basically put on hold the order that Palm issued limiting indoor public gatherings. And now the mask mandate, the last thing that Evers really has kind of there that is an order in place, is being challenged and is before the State Supreme Court on Monday. So he's hemmed in legally in what he could do because of court actions.
Right. And also the numbers keep growing. They're frighteningly high. And DHS has now added a category of critically high counties where the virus is spreading critically high. 65 of Wisconsin's 72 counties are now in that category. Okay, let's move on. Now let's get to some post-election fallout. JR, the Senate and Assembly Elections Committees are going to meet next week to talk about how the presidential vote was cast and counted. Now, the Assembly chair of that committee is Representative Ron Tussler. He's an Appleton attorney. The Senate chair of that is Senator Kathy Bernier, who spent 12 years as a Chippewa County clerk. One background here, the ranking member on the Assembly side is Representative Joe Sanfilippo, and you saw his press release. He alleges, among other things, that election officials in Dane and Milwaukee counties colluded to let nearly 250,000 voters vote as indefinitely confined. Meanwhile, before I give you a chance, Robin Voss said to the Journal Sentinel, I think it's unlikely that Mr. Voss's word investigation, his word, will overturn the win for Joe Biden in Wisconsin, but we need to have an investigation. Okay, so you've got Senate and Assembly Elections Committee, and what about the potential that Mr. Voss floated about subpoenas, JR? They haven't done in more than 40 years.
Yep. Last time I talked to Representative Tussler, he was still working on what he was going to possibly issue in terms of subpoenas, as well as like a couple other factors with this. Look, I've asked a number of people this week, you know, what is the point of this exercise with the committee? Because we have seen no hard evidence of any actual fraud beyond the usual small things that happen every election. Like there's a mistake here, human error there. There was a conspiracy theory out on the web this week that somehow the votes in Rock County were switched and they were supposed to be for Donald Trump, but they were switched to Joe Biden. That didn't happen. What happened was the Associated Press, which collects statewide totals on election night, had an error in this, they call it scraping, of the county clerk's website. You check the county clerk website, which is a better authority on this, things never changed. It was never like votes were moved, but this got legs because somebody had screenshots of a FoxNews.com website showing votes going that were issued on the Biden side, going to Trump side. It's not real, but there is a segment of the Republican base that is convinced that this election was not done on the up and up. And this investigation, if you want to call it that, is basically to appease that part of the Republican base. People I talk to do not think this is going to find anything that would significantly alter the outcome of the election. Now, I've heard from Republicans who argue, look, going through this exercise will address those concerns we've heard from our base. It will show nothing happened. It should be end of story. I've also the concern that by the more you kind of keep this talk alive, the more you inflame it and possibly undercut the faith in our democracy that we have in this country.
Well, we have the most election officials in the nation, 1,850. According to Elections Administrator Megan Wolf, they've just worked tirelessly and selflessly to conduct this election. They don't need to be subpoenaed to come in to brag about the job that they've just done. So I find this hearing very interesting. Excuse me. Now, Megan Wolf was asked about those that have doubts, alleged fraud at her briefing yesterday. And we're going to hear from her. If people have concerns, they can watch the whole process, the canvas and any potential recount for president. But let's let Megan Wolf make that point, please.
You know, I really would encourage people that are feeling skeptical about the process. I know how important this is. I mean, this is of the utmost importance. And so I would encourage people to get involved, to seek out more information from sources like your local election official or your state election official, and to get involved in the process, to observe the canvas. If there's a recount, to observe the recount, and to learn about how elections work. And if you see issues with the process, if you see things that you don't like about the process, to ask, why is that process there? And usually the answer is, that's what the law says. You know, my job as an election administrator is just to implement the law. I don't have opinions about laws. I don't have laws I like or don't like. I just am handed laws, and we're asked as election administrators to implement those. And so if some of the procedures are things that perhaps you don't like or think could be improved, you know, those are certainly great questions for your lawmakers as well.
Meanwhile, in federal court in Green Bay yesterday, Trump supporters, the group called True the Vote, filed suit to ask that votes not be counted, not be certified. Excuse me, that's a proper term. Milwaukee, Dane, and Menominee counties. By the way, the voters in Milwaukee and Dane gave Mr. Biden, President-elect Biden, 577,000 votes, which is about 45% of his statewide total. JR, I have a confession. I didn't read the pleadings. I didn't read the lawsuit. What is True the Vote alleging?
Basically, it's alleging that there are general problems with absentee ballots. There are a lot of absentee ballots in these counties, and then there's this general allegations of fraud that they promised they would prove once they have access to more information, and they want these three counties or votes thrown out, and they want to prevent the state from certifying presidential electors unless these counties are not counted. Obviously, this would swing the state to President Trump. There are a couple of issues with the lawsuit from talking to some lawyers. Number one, normally when I get a lawsuit that alleges something went wrong, there are affidavits attached to the lawsuit with people's names attached to it, the address they live at, and an affidavit is sworn basically for a legal official that this is true. This lawsuit contains a series of allegations of people identified only by their initials. And one example of the alleged fraud is somebody who's canvassing somewhere in Wisconsin, doesn't even say where, says she talked to somebody who said he got 10 absentee ballots from the Wisconsin Elections Commission, and his neighbors also got 10 ballots from the Wisconsin Elections Commission. A couple problems with that. Besides the fact that it's a person identified by their initials, and we don't have any details about what actually may have occurred, the Wisconsin Elections Commission does not send absentee ballots to voters. Local clerks do. So there's a red flag. Now, there's somebody who said there's a Menominee Falls election supervisor who said she did a check of obituaries and data in Milwaukee counties and ran it against my vote, Wisconsin, to see if anybody had voted but had died before election day and had three names. What we don't know is if those votes were actually counted, because clerks also check that information and will pull a vote out of the pile if they have somebody who passed away between when the vote was cast and election day. Basically, there's no proof there. There's no there. This is a lot of allegations without a lot of substance just yet. Now, if they prove it, that's a different story. But they want to try to get this a judge in Green Bay, Judge Griesbach, who's going to sign the case, to throw out the votes, every vote cast in three counties. Now, why those three counties? They're all heavily Democratic. Why not a place like Brown County? A lot of absentee ballots in Brown County, or Waukesha County. A lot of absentee ballots there. But guess what? Those counties went for Donald Trump. It's a little bit odd. I'll be curious to see if they get anywhere with this lawsuit when it's all said and done.
JR, is it fair to say these are like the legal Hail Mary passes that the Trump backers have also thrown in states of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia?
Absolutely. I mean, again, there are a lot of things in this lawsuit that don't add up to what I've seen before in similar lawsuits. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. Maybe there's something more than what I see is somebody's read a lot of court briefings, but I've had a couple of attorneys argue to me that people file things like this should be sanctioned because they are baseless and they are not good for the court system. But we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. Last week we talked about Senate Republicans electing their leader, the new Senate Majority Leader, the new Senate President. The other three caucuses elected their leaders this week. Let's focus on Assembly Republicans because they will have 61-38 control of that chamber when the next session convenes in January. They reelected Assembly Speaker Robin Voss of Rochester, Speaker Pro Tem Tyler August of Lake Geneva, Majority Leader Jim Steinke of Kaukauna, Assistant Majority Leader Kevin Peterson of Opaca, Caucus Chair Tyler Vorpagel of Plymouth, Caucus Vice Chair Cindy Ducal, town of Delafield. Any real surprises here, JR?
No, there were a couple of conservatives who challenged incumbent leadership in this caucus. For example, Rob Brooks of Sockville, he challenged Robin Voss. As far as I can tell, it didn't go very far. Remember, Rob Brooks was the assistant majority leader in 2018 when he made some inappropriate comments at offsite caucus function and resigned his leadership post. Like in any big group, you're going to have a segment of malcontents or people are unhappy about the direction that leadership is taking it. It happens in every organization. There is a contingent in the caucus that doesn't like that they haven't voted on the mask mandate, for example, that wants to be more bold or do things differently. But what happened in caucus was those folks who tried to challenge leadership were shot down forcefully. Don't forget, too, Rep. Scott Allen, Republican from Waukesha, he sent a letter to colleagues the week before the election saying that caucus hadn't been bold enough. He mounted a challenge to Samantha Kirkman for Sergeant Arms. He also fell short. Now what I'm watching is how will Robin Voss manage his caucus going forward? When you take a shot at the leader and you fall short, there's a price to pay in politics. The assignment could be for Rob Brooks next session or a Scott Allen, for example. From what I understand, Dan Canodal, who was the caucus chair, lost to Tyler Vorpagel. He supported Rob Brooks in his challenge to Robin Voss. Well, Dan Canodal had a whole lot of money spent on his behalf by the caucus and Republican groups to help save him in a seat that was hotly contested in the Milwaukee suburbs. That's kind of a no-no. With caucus, when you got that kind of support to then challenge a leader rather than backing the leader who helped deliver the support that you needed to win re-election.
Okay, you've talked about the new faces, Tyler Vorpagel as caucus chair. Kevin Peterson is also a new face. He replaces Representative Mary Felskowski, who's a senator-elect. Were there any challenges for that position?
Yeah, it's a three-way race. So really, the focus has been the top spots, Voss, Steinicke, those kinds of things. But if you look through the results, there are others, some kind of more conservative members who challenged for seats and weren't successful. Now, these guys are by no means rhinos or anything like that, but that wing of the party that wants to go really more conservative wouldn't make much headway in leadership elections this week.
Okay. Also, the Democratic caucuses in both the Assembly and Senate elected their leaders. Let's go through those quickly. In the Senate, Minority Leader Janet Buley, town of Mason, was reelected. Assistant Leader Janice Ringhan of Evansville was reelected. Caucus Chair will be Jeff Smith of Eau Claire. And a incoming new senator, Melissa Sargent of Madison, will be caucus vice chair. Senator Chris Larson of Milwaukee challenged Ringhan. What was his message?
I wasn't in caucus to know for sure what the discussion was, but there was some unhappiness because Democrats lost two seats on election night last week. The flip side of that is those were seats they should have lost, quite frankly. Patty Schottner, a Republican from, or Democrat, sorry, from Somerset, northwestern Wisconsin by the Twin Cities. That's a plus 17 Trump district of 2016. She won that a special election January of 18. Low turnout election was the first of the blue wave coming nationally that year. She had a very uphill battle. The Green Bay area seat the Democrats lost. Dave Hansen might be the only Democrat face the planet that can hold that seat. Eric Wimberger, Republican, an attorney, beat Hansen's nephew, Jonathan Hansen. Jonathan just doesn't have the cross-party appeal that Dave Hansen has. It's just the way it is. And so you had seats acting like they're supposed to act, essentially, at the Senate level, because they probably followed the top of the ticket. Now, Dan Kopanky over in La Crosse area ran a stronger than expected race against Brad Paff, who still won, former DATCAP secretary under Governor Evers. It's a Democratic seat, but it's become more Republican when Trump is on the ballot. Still, Brad won. So there was some kind of unhappiness about that there wasn't more success, especially the amount of money that was spent in some of these races. At the same time, you're fighting the nature of a district, and money doesn't always offset that.
Okay. Okay, now let's look at who Assembly Democrats chose as their leaders. They kept as the minority leader, Representative Gordon Hintz of Oshkosh. They kept as assistant leader Diane Hesselbein of Madison. They kept caucus chair Mark Spritzer of Beloit. And we have a new face in leadership, caucus vice chair Lisa Subek of Madison. Any PSs on that?
No, none of the races were challenged even. They were all one candidate ran in each of those races.
Okay. But how much fun is it to be a Democrat when you're looking at those rather large GOP majorities in both houses?
The challenge for Democrats is, can they make any headway in the next, in each election, right? Senate Democrats have gone backward for several cycles now in a row. Can they reverse that trend? We'll get new maps after the next census, likely drawn by a court. Will those maps be better for Democrats? We can't be much worse than they are right now. So how will they perform if they do get that opportunity with the new map? What will the environment be like? And oh, by the way, if Democrats don't have at least one of the governor's office, the Senate, or the Assembly after the 22 elections, I will bet you money that Republicans will choose a bill right away in 2023 to draw maps that they want. Because courts have said over and over again, while they will draw a map, they prefer to be done by the legislature, and it's okay in the middle of the decade to draw a map as lawmakers when you've had a court draw the one that's in place. So keep an eye on that dynamic for 2022. If Governor Evers loses in 22, doesn't run, or whatever happens, Republicans win the executive branch, that means there will be a new map again, this one drawn by Republicans.
Okay, thank you. New subject. I went to the Legislative Fiscal Bureau site today looking for their projections of GPR income in the next biennium, 21-23. They're not putting up any because we don't know the effect of the pandemic. So the when DPI, Department of Public Instruction, asked for $1.6 billion in new money over a two-year period, we don't know how much DPI wants of additional tax revenues just because we don't have those numbers. But it's interesting to take a dive into what DPI wants for the budget. Excuse me. They want a boost per pupil aid. They also want $371 million more for special ed, $46.5 million more for mental health and wellness. They say that some of this increase is needed because of the effect, the toll that the COVID-19 pandemic. So they're projecting, they're asking for these ways to ease the impact of COVID on our K-12 school districts. Number one, allow the districts to use their 2020 or 2019 enrollment, whichever is greater, to calculate state aid. Allow districts to count 4K students, for kindergarten students, as full-time students per state aid, and limit how much state aid a district can lose due to declining enrollment. Just by way of context, recently you saw the same release. K-12 enrollment statewide dropped 3% a year. Now, I saw an interview that the current co-chair, who will stay co-chair of finance, Representative John Nygren, gave to Channel 3. He said that budget is unrealistic because we really don't know what the impact of the pandemic is going to be on tax collection. So DPI, nice wish list. You ain't going to get it. Your thoughts, JR?
We will get from the Department Administration a week from today the report that looks at the final year of this budget and looks ahead to 21-23. They'll lay out for us what their revenue expectations are. They'll give us a framework. It'll also add up all of the spending requests from state agencies and see what the budget shortfall is. Now, it's not a real shortfall, okay? Because it's what's requested versus what we expect to have. You don't always get what you want in this business. So keep that in mind with the number. But we've always had this benchmark of like what we have to cut to make the budget balance. I went through back in September when the first round of budget requests came in and had totaled around $750 million in new GPR spending even then. Now you're adding $1.6 billion on top of that. And oh, by the way, that GPR number from March, or sorry, from September, was kind of not as big as it could have been, because Department of Health Services is assuming in its budget request that Republicans will sign off on accepting federal money to expand the Obamacare program, or Medicaid through Obamacare program.
Medicaid, not gonna happen.
A tough sell. If you don't do that, that's even more general purpose revenue, our basic state checking account for tax revenue, that's gonna have to be tapped to cover our government programs, provide healthcare to citizens of Wisconsin. So there is a big mountain to climb right now, and it could get bigger depending on how those revenue forecasts come in next Friday.
And just a footnote, Governor Evers had given state agencies marching orders, ask for less because of the pandemic. DPI obviously didn't, but Governor Evers formerly ran the Department of Public Instruction. Okay, we're closing in on time. JR, rising stocks.
Howard Markline, new joint finance co-chair in the Senate. Not a surprise he was picked, because he was aligned with Devin Lemieux, the new Senate Majority Leader. The question people now have is, what will Markline's leadership style be as co-chair? And also, who will Lemieux put around him as a Senate finance team? Alberta Darling has led the committee for the past five sessions, six overall, which ties a record for the history of the Joint Finance Committee. Likely she's not going to be asked to stay on, because you don't really go from co-chair to a committee.
Right,
so where does she end up? But really, how's it going to act going forward? And you have Markline now working with Nygren. It'll be a new relationship to watch going forward.
Next.
So, Governor, we talked about Governor Evers a little bit before with the speech. The reaction I got afterward from that speech was, why wasn't there more to it? And the second reaction was, well, what more could he have done? Remember, he's reined in by what the courts have done, the various orders that he's issued. He needs legislative approval to do something more bold and aggressive. So people have thrown out to me ideas of, well, if it's just going to be a speech saying, please do this, why not have, for example, Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald, the outgoing majority leader of the Senate, side by side with them saying, look, we're a unified front. We need to do this together. What will this package of bills look like? How big will it be? Can they get anything done with it? There's a lot of questions about this. Same time, the governor struck what's basically the right time. Even Robin Voss said, hey, I agree with what the governor's saying. Mask up, take precautions, be smart. But what will the state do to actually address COVID-19 going forward?
Okay, JR, just 20 seconds on what you just said. How important was that Robin Voss statement saying mask up, et cetera? That was, one of his first public cries to mask up?
About voluntary compliance, not a state order.
Okay.
So that's a big deal. He said that people are complying, which I don't know where Robin's going, but from my talk to people around the state, people aren't complying in various bars, restaurants, and social settings. So we've got an issue out there.
Okay. And then following, please.
What I have leadership challenge, I think, dumb leadership challenges. So look, we talked about this a little bit. I asked people, why no challenges? I mean, you know, the Democrats didn't make any headway. The answers I got back were, one, it's no fun being the minority. Two, remember Jennifer Schilling left as Senate Minority Leader this session early and decided to leave legislature, in part because there's not a great working relationship between the Democrats in the legislature and the governor's office. And it got frustrating at times. So how can Governor Evers work more closely with these guys going forward? Two, there's a long road for Democrats ahead to get out of this minority. It's not really enjoyable work. You have to toil to get out of these numbers that they have, and there's not really light in the tunnel right now for them for his encouragement.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, there's so much happening next week that I have to go to my notes. Monday, the Supreme Court will hear a challenge to the governor's authority to issue back-to-back emergency orders without drafting a rule that would have to be approved by legislators, a rule through the Department of Health Services. The Elections Committee will, both houses will meet, as we've talked. The canvassing county officials will continue canvassing. We will get vote totals until all totals are in from all counties. President Trump's campaign cannot seek a recount. He'll have 24 hours after all totals are certified. Finally, will a federal judge in that Green Bay lawsuit, which asks that vote counts Milwaukee, Dane, and Menominee not be counted? A lot happening next week. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for November 13.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.